Welcome. Today, we're going to cover the IFF election with Malone Mitchell and a critical resolution on forever chemicals in our gear. This resolution, if passed, will have an impact on the entire fire service. We will talk to one of the authors. Resolution 28, toxic chemicals in our PPE, that will be heard at the IFF convention in the coming days. We are also only a few days away from the IFF election and convention, and this is far from the normal election season. In the past, we focused on past accomplishments and visions for the future. Only this is the first time in my lifetime that the very integrity of the IFF is on the ballot. You see, the FBI and Department of Labor are investigating an alleged pension scheme at the IFF. However, this is not the only alleged wrongdoing that there's an inference of impropriety that has cast a dark shadow on this convention. The Yankee Institute reported, based off the IFF's LM2s, that millions of dollars are being siphoned away from MDA in the form of contributions and donations back to union coffers. Our members believed these funds were going to research and treatment of dying adults and kids stricken with this dangerous and debilitating disease. Additionally, based off those same LM2s, it's been uncovered what I believe is a clear conflict of interest between the gear companies and the IFF. It is firefighter health and safety that bonds all firefighters. If you do this job long enough, you're gonna get hurt. Death, and now we've learned sickness, is a card held in every firefighter's hand. Yes, firefighters will make their spouse a widow and their kids parentless for the community we serve. However, this is not blind dedication. We must work together to ensure that the IFF is the watchdog for all members' health and safety. We commend Sean Mitchell, Secretary Treasurer of Nantucket Firefighters, and the President of Fall River Firefighters, Jason Byrne, for leading the effort to keep us safe. Malone Mitchell will join us at the 1:30 mark. And right now I'm gonna pass it over to PJ to introduce our great guest, Sean Mitchell. Go ahead.
Thanks, Frank. I was a little unprepared today, so I didn't have Sean's bio, but I'd just like to say it's an honor for me to introduce him. You know, there are many of us and many firefighters and leaders across the country talking about the issues, you know, Google Hangouts, articles, blogs, classes. There are very few people who are actually stepping up and being courageous to actually make change. And Sean is one of those, along with Jason, who have put together this resolution that will be heard at the IFF convention, resolution 28. So Sean, I commend you for not just talking and actually putting pen to paper and creating action on behalf of all the members, or for all the members of the IFF. And that will also trickle down to even our volunteer members. You know, if we do things and put actions in place that will benefit the IFF members, we're also benefiting all members of the fire service, which we like to have. So I'd like to turn it over to you, have you introduce yourself a little bit and tell us how this resolution came about, how you and Jason realized that it's enough is enough. It's time to stop talking and let's put action to this, all the way up to getting this resolution on the floor at the IFF convention.
All right. Thank you, PJ. And thank you to Frank and Chief Halton also for allowing me to be on here today and explain this resolution a little bit. My name is Sean Mitchell. I'm the Secretary Treasurer of Nantucket Firefighters Local 2509. And along with Jason Burns, who is the President of Fall River Firefighters Local 1314, we have submitted a resolution that will be heard next week at the IAFF 55th Convention. So if you go on the website right now, the IAFF convention website, it will be number 28. So it's resolution 28. It is titled Toxic Chemicals in PPE. There's been a lot of talk about PFAS lately, as you said. And so that was really what spurred us to write this resolution. But this could and it should cover all toxic chemicals, because this PFAS situation has been going on for a very long time. 70 or 80 years in our country, and we still have it in our turnout gear. And so, you know, we need to put a stop to that, but we also need to make sure that this doesn't happen again with other chemicals. If we can get them to stop using PFAS, who knows what they're going to use instead. So this resolution does a few things. I welcome anybody to go on and read it on the IAFF website, but you can also find it, I think, on Fire Engineering. There'll be a link in which Jason and I sort of explain it in greater detail, and we've added some links. So anybody can go on, and if they have any questions, I think that document will answer a lot of those questions. But essentially, this resolution will do a few things. And number one is to raise awareness of this issue, because there's still a lot of firefighters out there who don't know enough about PFAS. You know, they hear a little bit about chemicals in our gear, but they don't know why they're there. They don't know the history of it. They don't know all the deception behind it that's gone on for decades. And so we've sort of illustrated that in that document. So in addition to just raising awareness to help firefighters understand this better and to know how to handle their gear that contains these chemicals, and then push to change that both in the IAFF and the NFPA. We're also asking that the IAFF stop accepting money and sponsorships and advertisements from the textile, chemical, and PPE industries. Because although there are some good people in those industries, there's also a lot of bad people in those industries. And the further back you go, you know, so we wear the PPE, but prior to that, those fabrics come from textile companies. And prior to that, the chemicals come from the chemical companies like DuPont, 3M, WL Gore. All of those companies have a very clear history of deceiving the end user, loading up their products with chemicals, using fake science, junk science, to try to convince them that these chemicals are safe, and then not accepting any responsibility when people like firefighters or like the communities who are drinking this contaminated water from these chemicals, they don't accept any responsibility, they don't accept the liability, and they continue to push their false science. So we want the IFF to separate from these industries. You know, we still have to be involved with them because we have to wear turnout gear, and we recommend everybody continue to wear their turnout gear. But we need to separate ourselves. And the IFF exists to watch out for firefighters. And in order to watch out for firefighters, they need to make sure that we're not being unnecessarily exposed to toxic chemicals just by putting on our gear. We know that we're going to be exposed to toxic smoke, and there have been some changes regarding flame retardants, and there's still some work to be done there. But even if we don't go to a fire for a few shifts, we still are exposed to our turnout gear every time we go to work. And those chemicals are coming off of that gear, and we're absorbing it in our skin, we're breathing it in, and we're ingesting it. And we think, you know, there's some strong links between these chemicals and cancers and other illnesses that firefighters are facing. And we need to start to scrutinize these companies to make sure that they have our best interest in mind rather than their profits.
Sean, now this isn't just, you didn't just come up with this as Secretary Treasurer of Nantucket Firefighters. This was based on real science by Graham Peasley from Notre Dame, where they were doing independent studies that determined that PFABs were on our gear and were shedding off them. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah. So I've spent the last year researching this, which is what led to this resolution. And I sort of jumped in after a lot of work had already been done. And, I put my own research in with all of this other work that had been done for the few years prior. And that's what you find in this document with our resolution. But really, this was discovered back around 2016 or 2017 by Diane Cotter. And she's the one who eventually led to that study that you spoke of with Graham Peasley that did determine that all turnout gear is heavily fluorinated. So that means there is a lot of PFAS in the layers of our turnout gear. Prior to Graham Peasley's study, We weren't really sure because nobody really regulates these chemicals. The government doesn't. The NFPA knows that they're there because the people who create them sit on NFPA committees, so they know what's in the gear. The IFF likely knew what was in the gear, but nobody was telling the firefighters. And in fact, the industry, especially the chemical industry, has been denying it and producing fake science. And that's sort of trickled down now to the textile companies and to the PPE manufacturers. All that fake science is being pushed to us, the end users. And now that we have some legitimate science that's from Graham Peasley and some other studies that are underway right now, we can push back and tell them that we know that these chemicals are there. There are many, many independent and impartial scientists who know that these chemicals are making people sick. And you know, this resolution, along with the work of many other people, will start to change that, we hope.
Now, Sean, one of the issues that comes up is that the regulations are always behind technology, and that seems to be across all industries. And when science comes out about one form of these forever chemicals, it seems that the chemical companies change the chemical makeup of the actual chemicals. Can you speak a little bit to that? Because there's a lot of unknowns when dealing with these chemicals.
Sure. So PFAS, PFAS stands for per and polyfluoroalkyl substances. Those were discovered, they're man-made chemicals discovered back in around World War II by 3M and then used by DuPont. Not long after that, DuPont and 3M discovered that these chemicals were harmful, and they were harming, they found that out through mice studies, but they also found out that they were harming their employees. But the problem is, rather than stop using it, they just continued to use it and didn't tell anybody. So their employees, they knew their employees were getting sick. They knew that it was affecting female employees who were giving birth. There were birth defects from these chemicals, but they continue to use it. And even into the 1980s, DuPont, rather than discontinuing these chemicals, they found out that it would even permeate through protective gear. So they started to make their employees wear disposable gloves and disposable clothing because they didn't want them to take it home with them. But they didn't tell anybody about this. They didn't tell the government. They didn't stop making it. They just took those precautions, at least finally, for their employees. And then here we are 40 years later, and those chemicals are still in our gear. And the only reason, so PFAS, the most well-known are PFOA and PFOS. And around 2006 or so, because of the work of Rob Ballot, who I think you've had on your show, he discovered all of this in regard to DuPont. And through litigation, essentially, he was able to force them and seven other major manufacturers of PFOA to start to phase it out. So they phased out PFOA, which is also known as C8, by 2016. So C8, instead of using C8, they just started using C6. So they knocked two carbons off. They use C6, which is another PFAS chemical. It behaves a little bit differently than C8, but it's not as well studied. So they're free to use it. And that's what our gear is made with today. But if you bought gear in 2015, it was made with PFOA, which is phased out. They couldn't make it with that today because it is linked to cancer. And nobody told us, if you're a firefighter still wearing that gear, you're going to wear that based on NFPA 1971 up to 10 years. You'll be wearing that gear until 2025 at least. When one chemical is proven to be harmful, they simply switch to another one. So that affects us in the fire service. It affects everybody worldwide who has these chemicals in their blood. And that's why we need to treat these chemicals as an entire class and stop moving from one to the next, because there's over 9,000 of these PFAS. So treat them as a class, get them out of our turnout gear for now, and then we'll work to start to replace all of that gear.
No, Sean, and what you're saying, I agree with. As you know, I've been a voice as well as Frank and Chief Walton for this for a while. Let's just bring up a couple issues and a couple items for those that are watching. For those that are watching today that are unfamiliar with what's been going on, a good place for them to start is the movie Dark Waters, as well as the book wrote by Rob Ballot, to get a further understanding and kind of some of the history that you're talking about. The other point I'd like to also mention is while there have been some studies done and some great work from Graham Peasley and Rob Ballot, we do know that these forever chemicals do exist in our gear, but we still need more testing to find out how and if it's actually getting into our bloodstream. As of this point, the history shows that it is getting in there from our gear, but we don't have that solid testing as of yet. I look forward to seeing your resolution go forward, but I also look forward to seeing the science community take on additional testing to see how it's actually impacting us. But there are a lot of ways and things we should be doing today to limit our risk or to reduce our risk on not handling our gear, not wearing it for the meal, keeping it in a closed container if it's in your personal vehicle. I'm not talking clean cab, but not keeping it in the cab next to you if you're not needing to wear it to go to a run. So there are some things, and I would urge our listeners or the watchers today to go back into the archives and look at some of the stuff that we've talked about in the past on mitigation factors, things that we can do today. We're not going to get rid of PFAS today. It's still going to be in our turnout gear, but there are things that all of our firefighters across the country should be doing to begin to reduce that risk that they have. So again, I commend you on bringing this information forward in the form of a resolution, and I look forward to seeing how the IFF addresses it and goes forward. I'd like to give Chief Halton a chance to jump in on this because I know this is a topic that's very very dear to him, and we always appreciate his input regardless of what the topic is. Chief?
Yeah, and I wanted to say thank you to Sean. I dabble in so many things in our industry, but Sean, you've taken a deep dive, and that's, you know, we need flag bearers like you and like Matt Malin, who's going to be on with us next, who want to take that deep dive and do the hard work. And I'm great friends with Graham, and I'm so blessed to be associated with him. And Rob Beloit has been very good to me. And obviously, it's no secret, I'm a cancer survivor, and I'm currently going through cancer treatments. And, you know, it's not a casual thing. And if you've never been sick, it's hard to describe what it's like. And if you've been sick, it's different for all of us, but it's terrifying, quite frankly. And so, you know, anything we can do to mitigate exposures, right? And I'm not a Snidely Whiplash guy. And I think that there's always, you know, there's bad actors everywhere in the world. And so I'm never going to get into that level, but I am going to get into the level about, well, what real safe alternatives are out there that, and as Sean just put it so eloquently earlier, some misinformation was passed along to textile people who then passed it along to producers of the actual gear. Because the men and women who are making our gear don't make the textiles. And the textiles people get stuff from all over the place. So it's a fascinatingly, wickedly complex problem. And so my hat's off to Sean. So that being said, Sean, I guess, and I know you're very interested in the issue at hand, but for alternatives, is there, you know, what are you seeing out there on the horizon? Because the PFAS currently do a function, right? They're a moisture barrier. And there are things that I don't want firefighters' skin ever touching, you know, like biohazards and other things like that. So they do serve a function, but so it's such a tough deal, correct?
Yeah, so they do serve a function, but those functions, I think, were served before they started using PFAS as well.
No, exactly. I think we need to promote those alternatives, you know, to whatever right. We were doing in the past.
Yeah, so as far as alternatives, any turnout gear that meets NFPA 1971 and is certified to that standard contains PFAS chemicals. We don't have a choice right now. So there are alternatives, especially for the outer shell. There's at least one company that we believe has passed NFPA certification and will soon be available So you could get turnout gear, hopefully in 2021, with an outer shell that does not contain PFAS.
What does it contain? I guess that's my question. What would you call the material that they're using that it does contain that provides that same level of protection?
I think that goes to what I said earlier, is that why we did not name our resolution PFAS in PPE. It's toxic chemicals in PPE, because that's what we need to know. What are they? They've already done this once. When they stopped using C8, they used C6, which is called a regrettable substitution in the world of science. So now if they're not going to use C6 or any PFAS, what are they using instead as a durable water repellent? I don't know. And they don't have to tell me. So what we're trying to do is get the IAFF to lead and take charge and find out what they're using, and then find out from the NFPA if there's something else that they can use. And because right now these chemicals are they're innocent until proven guilty, and so we don't know if they're harmful to us until we wear it for decades and people get sick and then it's linked to it. We would like to know if it's harmful before they put it in our turnout gear and expose us to it every day.
So to put it in truck terms for somebody who used to work on a truck, we just want the IFF to be the watchdog that it's supposed to be so that everybody says the IFF is looking out 100% for firefighter safety, and that is their only interest to make sure that we're safe.
Well, and I'll just add one other thing to that. And God bless the IFF, and I'm a member in good standing. I left a member in good standing, but I'm a safety third guy like Mike Rowe, right? If you're going to rely on other people to keep you safe, good luck with that. Every firefighter should be interested in every aspect of their safety, including their gear. And every firefighter should be an advocate for gear that is the best gear possible, that's non-toxic and non-threatening, period. And then the IAFF will support that. But, and I get where you're coming from, Frank, but I don't want our listeners, I don't want the folks who I talk to every day to think that I'm putting anybody's safety in anybody else's hands. The buck stops with every single one of us. You got to be like Sean. You've got to be like everybody on this call. You've got to be vocal. You got to be interested. You got to be paying attention. So I just wanted to get that out. I'm sorry.
Bobby, I cannot agree with you more. And the IFF is made up of guys and girls, just like Sean, who's taken a leadership role in saying, hey, let's just look at this in a different light and change what we're doing. So that's why I really commend him. And I think the IFF is made up of the members. And that's kind of where I think the change needs to be, is the membership needs to take a larger role. And I really applaud the political courage of individuals like Sean and Jason Burns for stepping up, because this isn't an easy subject. I mean, I'm sure it's not comfortable coming on this show asking questions from Bobby Halton. I mean, it's just that it's not a thing that you have every day. So Sean, I really applaud you for putting yourself out there and taking a leadership role on this issue.
Yeah, it's about as risky as asking your grandfather if he has a Werther's in his pocket, because I do. That's
Sean, and one thing, and some of the courage is very evident in the documentation that you've put together. You know, as an IAFF member, as an IAFF local officer, you've brought some things to light. When you discuss in the resolution how the IAFF should not be taking dollars or sponsorships from companies that are being sued by IAFF members, that's not something that I realized was even occurring. So to step out and step up like you have, and I would encourage everybody listening today to go to Fire Engineering, go to the link for today's show, and you can look at the resolution. You can look at the one or two page document that Sean and Jason put together to further educate us. So even though this is a really short, condensed show, we just wanted to bring this to light today and point all of our followers to the right direction, to look at what Sean and Jason are proposing and to contact their affiliates. If they believe in this and they believe in the resolution should be passed, to contact their affiliates, contact their local officers and their state election officers to really look at Resolution 28 in hopes that it gets passed in its entirety.
Sean, what is, in closing, what is the process now with the resolution for the convention?
Well, this is personally my first time doing one of these, but as far as I know, the convention begins on Monday, the 25th of January, and will run until Thursday. So at some point during the convention, the resolutions will be heard on the floor. And when ours is heard, I think we'll have a chance, Jason and I, to speak to it. And then the body will be able to ask questions and propose amendments that will then be voted on. And hopefully in the end, this passes. So I think we'll find out next week.
Sean, I can't thank you enough. Bobby, do you have any closing words for Sean before we move into our next segment? And Sean, you are welcome to stay on for the remainder of the show. We would be honored to have you.
Bobby? Yeah, we sure would. And I just want to say thank you because Sean has helped me. He does the research for me and points me in the right direction, much like our guest that just came back with us. And I said earlier, Malin can back me up on this, that none of us can know everything about everything. So it's really great when folks like Sean and Malin come on, who do this all the time, who can help those of us who don't understand all the ins and outs of it to understand it better. So Sean, thank you for that. And thank you for what you do. And welcome, my friend. It's so good to see your face.
You as well. You know what I like about Sean the most? He's my brother from another mother. His last name. I mean, he's a Mitchell. So he's got to be a good dude, right?
It's all about unity. It's a great day.
That's so funny. That's good.
Malin, I want to welcome you on the show, and we really appreciate you, you know, coming on to Fire Engineering. We think it's so important to have these conversations in all different groups out there so that the members are getting the best information right from the members. You're coming on the show today with the wind at your back with getting an endorsement by the Chicago Firefighters, which is no small feat, and that should be recognized alone, you know. In any election, we're going to have sides that disagree, but we all can't be disagreeable, and we all got to realize it's all about firefighter safety and about moving the job forward. PJ, can you introduce our great guest today?
Absolutely. First of all, Malin, thank you for joining us. We really appreciate you coming on the show, especially I'm sure your schedule's pretty busy right now, but to give all of our members a chance to hear directly from you and what your future vision is. So I'm just going to read a couple pieces from Malin's bio so we can familiarize themselves with him. Malin became a firefighter at a young age at 19 years old. He rose to the ranks to become Lieutenant Station 1 in Wisconsin's capital city of Madison, where he still serves and lives today with his wife, April, and two children. After serving on the local board of 311 for years, he was elected the president in 2011, of the Professional Firefighters of Wisconsin, Local 311 in 2014. He served as both a local president and as the youngest and first African-American to serve as president of PFFW. Malin knows how to lead in challenging times. And he inherited a deeply divided association in the aftermath of the internal allegations of misconduct that split the union. Working with his team in Wisconsin, he took the reins and cut through the problems that were tearing the union apart. Now PFFW is united and stronger than ever. Sounds very similar to some of the things that, you know, Malin may be facing if he's elected in this upcoming election. As PFFW's president, he's been very instrumental in passing infectious disease presumption law that covers our members if they contract a disease or disability on the job, as well as a bill, which is very, very important to our membership, that ensures the health insurance is covered for families and spouses of members who are killed in the line of duty. Because all too often, our members are killed or injured in the line of duty, and our families are then not protected down the road. So, Malin, I'd like to thank you for all of your hard work for the IFF members that you've done for all these years. And I also appreciate your courage to kind of stand out there and really put down your guard and take a leadership role that is not going to be an easy role for whoever gets into the elected position. So I thank you for willing to step out there for all of us.
Yeah, and thank you for that kind introduction. That was a good introduction. You must have got that from our website. Thanks for reading it just like we wrote it. So, no, I appreciate the introduction. I actually appreciate being here. you know, a lot of there are some folks that say, oh, I don't know if you want to go on Frank's show because, you know, he's probably not, you guys probably don't align too well politically. But to me, especially, and it's Inauguration Day. I don't think we planned this, but it is Wednesday. I know this is Hump Day Wednesday and Hump Day Conversations. And I'm happy to be here. And we're probably not all going to agree, but that's what America's about. That's what the fire service is about. And that's what, as we all know, the firehouse kitchen table is about. So I'm happy to be here and discuss the issues.
Well, and I think that from my perspective, this conversation and what Malin just said is what America is truly about. It's about, I'm a man of the right, Malin's a man of the left, and we've worked together and known each other for about 10 years now, maybe 15 years. And we love each other. And I love Eddie. And you know, just because you have a different worldview about topics that aren't life and death, and that aren't, you know, good or bad or good or, you know, evil or, you know, virtuous, that's fine. You know what I mean? Because on the topics that really matter, I can tell you right now that Malin Mitchell has got moral virtue. He's got character. He's got integrity. And anytime I've had to talk to him about anything, you've been straightforward with me. And very little that we do in the union is really politically charged, except when it comes to endorsing candidates, period. That's it.
Yeah.
The rest of it is about firefighter health and safety and welfare. And on that, you couldn't put a piece of paper between our opinions because we're all aligned on the health and welfare and survival of the American firefighter. So I've got two questions that I've asked every candidate. And then I've got one that just came up to me recently that I think we need to speak about. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on them. One is that I've been working with Sherrod Brown for, gosh, I believe it's going on 7.5, 8 years. And he's a congressperson from the state of Ohio. And as you know, the windfall elimination provision was a law that was enacted years ago that's highly unjust to pension holding people, law enforcement, fire, who pay in contribution, and who many of our pensions are very, very small, and they're really not federally supported. Other unions that are very similar to ours, like the railroad people, they were excluded. So consequently, if you pay in to Social Security in our current system, but your fire dues don't, you get hit with a large penalty in your Social Security, which a lot of firefighters are unaware of. And Sherrod Brown has been kind enough. He's been working for 7 years. He's had this bill and it's been stalled in committee, and, you know, just he hasn't been able to get folks to really help him. And the fear has always been that those of us that don't have our jobs, that don't pay Social Security, will be, you know, feel encumbered to do so. And it'll cost our members, you know, Social Security money. So I get that as a legitimate concern. But the other side of that equation are the men and women who, because our job generally doesn't pay big money. All of us were, you know, carpenters. I worked on cars. You know, we all had side gigs, if you will, to supplement being a firefighter, because it doesn't pay a lot. It pays a lot better than it did, but it doesn't, we're not making what bankers make. So, Malin, I was just wondering if you were, you know, I know you're aware of Sherrod Brown's bill. Do you support what he's doing there? And what do you think?
Well, you're exactly right. And not only do I support it, we've actually lobbied on it. I'm trying to think how far back, but the windfall elimination provision we've talked about at many lengths here in Wisconsin. And I know that it was on the legislative agenda at the IFF at one point. I'm trying to go back and jog my memory what year it was, but I'll tell you, it's a bill that was actually, you know, it's kind of like when bills are passed and it encompasses a lot of people, but then the fallout, because it's really made for federal employees, right? It's really made for a federal employee pension.
Which you're exactly right, because when they retired, they looked like they were paupers. They looked like they never earned a dime, so they got maximum benefits. But part of that, Malin, too, is that people don't understand, is that back when everything was paper and pencil. Today, it's all computer.
Well, and 75% of our members don't pay into Social Security across the country. So when you talk about substantial earnings, and you talk about the the WEP or the elimination, the provision, is something that we need to change. And it's something I think, my opinion, we have a very small window here within the next 2 years in working with Congress, who should be friendly to firefighters, right? I mean, there were times even when it came to collective bargaining and us trying to get collective bargaining passed, the Democrats were actually in control when that didn't pass.
I know.
So we actually need, in my opinion, we have a 2 year window here to get things like WEP passed and getting us out of, and passing Senator Brown's bill. Also passing Senator Brown's, he has another great bill that allows us to buy in the public safety officers, to buy in Medicare at age 55. I think that's a great bill that we should, and something, if you go on my website, shameless plug, MitchellForIFF.com. But if you go on my website, you'll see, I talk about that bill among, as well as collective bargaining and things that we can get done. But to go to your question, Chief, yes, it's something that we should make sure that we get done. It's something that will benefit our members. And quite frankly, it treats us inappropriately when it comes to substantial earnings as well as our Social Security benefit. And so I think that would be something that would be on top of my list.
And I think to Malin's point, and I support both of those bills that Senator Brown's proposing as well, we're not asking for anything we're not willing to pay for. We're not asking for benefits we didn't earn.
Yeah.
We're not asking for to be treated any differently than any other citizen. That's all we're asking. You know, if you never pay in, you're never going to get anything out. But if you're working two jobs or you retire and then work, you shouldn't be penalized in a way that no other citizen is, you know. And so it's really disparate treatment, and hopefully, and thank you for that answer. It was very clear. May I ask my second question, Frank, or would you like someone else to go? So my second question is a little more nuanced, and I don't know that it really falls under IAFF policy, but during all of the summer and since COVID happened, I followed, you know, Black Lives Matter and the Proud Boys, and I followed Oath Keepers, and I followed Antifa and all these different people to see what was going on, you know, and all of them, I think, had whatever their motives were or whatnot, but none of them are letting up, you know what I mean, in any way. At least that's my assessment of them. So I think that civil unrest, if you will, is not something that's going away anytime soon. And Vice President Harris agrees with me. She said, just because, you know, irrespective of who won, and she did, you know, we can expect civil unrest to continue. So in the fire service, there's always been this great debate. Should we wear, body armor? I'm okay with places where it's really violent for our members to wear body armor. I'm okay with that. But then some folks want to take it a step further and have us armed. And I don't agree with that. And I know as the president of the IAFF, someone will ask you at some point, you know, where you come down on it. And we've never been able to have that conversation. So I just wanted to get a feeling. I think that, and I get it, we're vulnerable if we show up first and we can't protect ourselves. But I think we put ourselves at even greater risk if bad guys think we have guns that they could take away from us, because we don't use them every day. We're not trained in them. And if you're going to carry lethal force, you got to be willing to use it. You know what I mean? And I don't know, I couldn't as a firefighter, and I'm still a volunteer. Thank you very much. And I'm an old guy and I'm still out there because I love it. And I live in a very rural community. And I would never imagine carrying a weapon with me to a fire call. I just couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. And I'm not against weapons. I'm a Second Amendment guy. I own guns. But I would never take a gun on a fire call. So how do you feel about that, Malin?
That's a great question. You know, when I'll tell you, I had a conversation with my chief just probably a month ago, and we were talking about ballistic vests and how we're putting on our clothing allowance to have a better ballistic vest than what we currently carry on our rigs right now. And he's for it. I'm okay. I'm for it, obviously. But I said I want to make sure that our ballistic vests don't look like what the cops are wearing. And he said, why? I said, well, because we don't want to be confused with them. Like, now they do great work. Believe me, it's going to sound cliche, but many cops, I just talked to our local president here of the MPPO yesterday, and we're great friends. We get along. But we have a different function, and we're public safety, yes. But we have a different job, and they have lethal force that they can use. They carry guns, but I don't think we should. There was a debate, and I think we had this conversation at one convention. I think the, and I'm going to get sideways here, but I think the resolution came maybe out of Miami area, but I don't want to say. I think it was Florida. But anyway, I know we had this conversation, this debate on the floor of the IFF convention many years ago about firefighters carrying weapons. And we have some of our members here in Madison that want to carry weapons, those that are investigators and others. And I'm totally against it. I'm not against guns. I'm not against Second Amendment. I'm not against our members having guns. Right. But I just think we get into a different realm of our job when we're carrying a firearm on our person. And we are there to help. We are there to assist. We have the capability of calling code 10, or we have the ability of calling, you know, getting MPD or getting police there very quickly. And they have a different function than us. I do not agree with us carrying guns at all. No time anywhere. And if you want to carry a gun, I think you took the wrong civil service test.
I couldn't agree with you more. And even on my rural volunteer job, our sheriff department guarantees us same day service. So oftentimes, you know, we know where we're going. The people are armed. But I would rather take that risk than compromise our image, you know, because the bad guys know, you know, all we carry is our medical supplies. And if they want to take them from us, take them. You know what I mean? I'll put my hands up. You can take them. But thank you for answering that. And I appreciate it. And I'll yield the floor.
Thanks, Chief. So, and then I went back to your campaign website, MitchellFryAFF.com, and you have a great video there. And something that stuck out in the very beginning of your video says, we have to have our house in order, as you're talking about your campaign and the your future as an IFF executive officer. Today we have Sean Mitchell with us also, so I'd like to give you a chance to speak with him regarding Resolution 28. If you're elected, what will be the first steps that you will take to get the IFF house in order, and how do you look at upon Resolution 28? What are your thoughts going forward with Resolution 28 being voted on, and also for Sean, who is one of the writers of that resolution?
So that's a two-part question. First, our house in order means that we are actually taking care of our members. So when as a family, right, and we all have families, when we go on a vacation, we don't budget for the vacation first and then go on a vacation and then come back and say, okay, now can I pay our rent or our mortgage and pay our car note if we have one? We actually take care of things that are essential and essential services of our own life, right? Paying our mortgage, our rent, my daughter's in college, make sure I have enough money to pay for her tuition. And then I pay for the things that are enhancements to life. And having our house in order is we have a $75 million budget at the IFF. $54 million of that is per cap dues. I truly believe that our members should know where every dollar is being spent. And it's in transparency is thrown around a lot. Accountability is just almost a cliche now. It's like drinking water. But I truly believe that our members who pay the freight, and I'm a member, obviously. I still work on the line. And being a local president and a state president at the same time, I still currently serve in those two positions. It is imperative for us so that we don't go into peril or demise if our members have to have trust in who we are and what we're doing. And it's very easy for anyone to claim misconduct, or it's very easy for someone to say that things aren't being worked right. But we have to be able to organize our members. And we do that by, in my opinion, by letting our members and having an open book to what we're spending money on, because it's their money, right? It's the union is based upon our members. Without our members, without our local, without our members that are back, and the men and women that are on the street right now as we're on this Zoom or this Facebook Live or this call, we don't have a union. We don't have DC or headquarters. So I think, in my opinion, servant leadership, and no offense, I know a lot of you are chiefs, but a lot of times chiefs use this term servant leadership. And I don't think a lot of them know what the hell it means. Because servant leadership means that you are working on behalf, I've never been a chief, but for my opinion, if you're working on behalf of your employees or the members or the employees of your city or municipality, In my life, my job is I work on behalf right now for 4,000 firefighters across our state. That's my job. So they can ask me anything they want. And my job is to give them a direct, honest answer. And if things aren't going good financially, they should know that because they're paying the freight for it. And if we're not having true general accepted accounting principles, they should know that. And they should, if we run out of money in August and we have a yearly budget, they should know that. If we're backfilling with investments and other dollars, they should know that. If we're borrowing money to pay for the pension at the IFF, to fulfill the employer obligation, our members should know that. And it may be ugly, but I believe we solve it together. I believe servant leadership means that I'm there. I'm not going to DC if I'm fortunate enough to be our general president, be some big union boss. I'm going there to work on behalf of the membership. And true servant leadership is having member-oriented decisions. Every decision I would make at that level would be about the members, and it'd be about the team working with the 16 district vice presidents and the talented team that is there now and currently. I'm not thinking that we're all going to agree on everything, because we're not. But we all need to know where the hell we're going and how we're going to get there. And we do that together. And that's why I'm running for general president, because I believe we need a fresh start at the top. President Schaefberger is leaving, as you all know, and not seeking re-election. I think we need a fresh start at the top to get back to having member-oriented conversations. Talk about some of the things that Chief Halton and I just talked about as far as passing legislation to help our members. And not talking about all this BS that we've been talking about for the last year and a half. And to go to the second part of your question, brother. Brother Mitchell, yes, I agree with his resolution. I think PFAS is a very complicated issue that requires a very complicated attack. I think it's more than just one thing. I think we should hold manufacturers accountable. But I also don't think that we just cast judgment and just cast judgment on manufacturers. Because I'm not naive, actually. I don't think they set out to give us cancer. I don't think they sponsor our events, and they knew that they were giving our firefighters cancer when it comes to PPE. We can get PFAS off our gear, and we should, 100% in agreement with that. But when we go in a burning building, there's PFAS all over the place. There's going to be burning materials that give us PFAS on our gear. Then do we go back and wash it? Some people do. And when we wash it, when we put it in an extractor, does that take all the PFAS off? Science again, and engineering will tell. But I'm in 100% agreement that we should not be taking money from PPE or manufacturers that are not willing to change. They're not willing to actually get the toxins out of our gear now that the science is clear. I don't act like I'm not a scientist. I am not an engineer. I was an apparatus engineer. I was a driver on our job. We got that title, but I was not really an engineer. I was a driver, right? That's what we call it. And not a ladder, Frank. I'm an engine person. But anyway, because we actually put the fire out. You guys are fresh air firefighters. But anyway, I really believe that we need to work with these manufacturers. I don't believe, and this is my opinion, DuPont, Morning Pride, Globe, and I know a lot of their executives. I think they sponsor a lot of you guys in fire engineering's. They're probably sponsoring this, right? I know they sponsor FDIC. I've been there. So I don't think they set out to give our members cancer. I think now that the science is clear and the engineers know what's going on, then we need to work with them to make sure that it's not in our gear, whether it be the outer shell, inner shell, whatever it is, that it's not in our gear, but also make sure we do everything we can to make sure our members don't get cancer. So I'm not just here to just say, okay, well, hold them accountable and that's it. How about we work together to figure out the problem, the issue, and then we solve it together as a fire service community. And as Chief Halton always says, as American fire service, I'm gonna put that to the Canadian fire service as well, because we represent two great countries. But how about we work together actually to solve the problem, as opposed to always casting dispersions and just saying, here's a problem, but I want to work on the solution to the problem.
Well, and Malin, I always consider them the northern part. So
the Northern American
fire. They always tease me. I said, you have Leo's, I consider you guys are northern Americans. So So, and I love the Canadians, but I'm an American firefighter. So, and so if, before Sean goes, I'll echo what you said. I work with these folks. I know these folks. They're my friends. I don't think any of them ever would want to harm any firefighter intentionally or lie to us or any of that. Now, I don't know much about chemical companies, so I can't speak to them. I do know some folks at DuPont, and they've been very good to me, nice to me, but I'm not a chemist. I'm not an investigator. I'm not a criminal mind. And the people that I know cry when we lose someone, and they really mean it. They pray for us, and they really mean it. And they're trying to make the best protective gear they possibly can. And I honestly believe that. And I know that, you know, I don't think I'm a naive person. I think I'm pretty savvy, and I'm a pretty good judge of character. And I've never met anybody that in the gear industry who's hasn't been absolutely wonderful. And you know, have I done stuff that unknowingly that's hurt myself or hurt others? Probably, but it was always unknowingly. And when it happens, I feel bad about it. No two ifs and ends or buts about it. But you know, at the time, if I had known, I would have done something differently. So I really believe that. So thank you for saying that, Malin, and I echo what you said. And Sean, you have the floor.
Thank you. And I don't mean any disrespect, but you're both on being naive. This is not new science. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Sorry. So, as I said, I don't mean any disrespect. Everything that you just said, both of you, is exactly what the industry would want you to say. This is not new science. The chemical companies and some of these manufacturers have known about this for decades, as I said earlier. They've known going back into the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, what these chemicals are doing. This is nothing new. And what both of you just said absolutely illustrates why we need this message to pass, because they have captured the fire service, and they've captured us so that people like you who have these strong voices in our position will get on here and say that they don't mean any harm. They don't mean to give us cancer. I agree with that. What they mean to do is continue to make billions of dollars and not accept liability for the cancers that they have given us. And there's a clear history. You just have to put some research and some effort into it. But it's all there. And it's the same playbook that they use with tobacco, asbestos, and now they're doing it with PFAS, and it'll be something else in the future. And if, you know, we could say work together, that's fine. But
I think we just lost Sean. So as soon as he comes back, for some reason, we're having some technical.
Well, can I, audio. Frank, do you mind if I respond to what he had to say?
No, please do, man, please.
And just so we're clear, at least that I'm clear, that I'm not saying that we shouldn't hold companies accountable.
Go ahead.
Okay. Because I think, I mean, what he's saying has a lot of merit. And you think about Philip Morris, and when we were all watching that, you know, Senate, and I was a kid when that happened, but we're watching that Senate hearing, and we talked about Philip Morris and other things. I agree with what Sean is saying. And I think we should hold people accountable, because we understand that they're in the money-making business, and they're going to do what's best for them to make money. But I also will say that when I say work together and work collaboratively, is that we have to wear gear to go in a fire. I mean, our foam is a great tool when used the right way. So we're not ever going to get away from wearing gear. You can stop smoking cigarettes, right? But we're going to wear gear, and we should have the right gear. And I agree with Sean saying, like, hey, these companies should be held accountable. I'm okay with that. And I'm good with your resolution. And I'm good with the IFF not taking any money from any toxic chemical manufacturer that's putting chemicals in our gear. But I also want to know what the solution is. And the solution is not, in my opinion, I mean, you can hold them accountable and take them to task, and they can spend, give millions of dollars to all the firefighters that have gotten cancer over the years, let's say. But we're still going to wear gear. We're still going to be running and burning buildings. So I would also talk about what is the solution? How do we get it done? Where, whether it be an inner shell, again, outer shell, you know more about it than I do, Brother Mitchell. And I'm not going to deny that, but I would actually get the IFF in front of making sure that, yes, we're holding them accountable, but we're also in the front lines when it comes to how do we make the gear more safe for our members.
Just one quick thing. You said when you compare it to smoking and tobacco, you're right. You don't have to smoke cigarettes. We have to wear gear that is made with toxic chemicals. We don't have a choice.
I think that's so, what I was saying, is that we have to wear gear. So that's my point. We have to wear gear. So you actually compared to cigarettes first, and you talked about the manufacturers of cigarette manufacturers. I'm saying you can stop smoking cigarettes, and you don't have to worry about what's happening to your body when it comes to cigarette. But we have to wear gear to go in a burning building, is my point. So I think we're saying the same thing, just differently.
So maybe you misunderstood what I said, or maybe I dropped off there, but the comparison to tobacco is about the deception and the fake science and the creating doubt so that people come on and say, well, these are good people. They sponsor our events. That's how it's compared to tobacco. Okay. The comparison to smoking, I don't have to smoke, but as you said, I have to wear my gear. So yes, let's work toward a solution. But the solution is not to have a company like DuPont, who has a clear history of not giving a shit about how they have affected the environment and the humans on Earth, and have them come up on stage at a cancer summit and be praised by our general president and the health and safety director of the IAFF, while there are people sitting in that audience watching at home who are suing DuPont for giving them cancer because of the chemicals that they're pumping into us. So that's the difference.
I got you. So I did misunderstand you, brother, and I agree with that point.
And Sean, just in all fairness to our guest, you cut out when you were speaking, so there was no way for him to hear your full thought. I am going to agree with our distinguished guests and Bobby Hall, and I don't think I'm a big gun nut, but firefighters shouldn't be carrying guns. You know, working in the inner city for years, I used to look at my crew and say, you guys good with going in? And they would all say yes, because I didn't want anybody to bleed out while we're waiting for a cop, because it took the police some time to get there. So we would just go in. And the one language that everybody understands, whether you're in a Spanish-speaking neighborhood or wherever you are, is respect. And I think that if we arm firefighters, we're going to lose a lot of that respect. I never had an issue in the inner city. And yeah, you can. Well, let's put it this way. The only person who ever pulled a gun on me in the inner city was a fire chief. So it wasn't on a call. So danger is everywhere. We have a dangerous job and we shouldn't be carrying guns. Malin, I do have one question, and this is a concern of mine, and I'm sure you've seen, I've been talking about it. It's pretty much my biggest pet peeve. And, you know, I'll throw a rock at myself too here. I was one of those guys when we were collecting for MDA that had the helmet on running between cars, completely dumb thing to do. Okay. So I was completely wrong, but I used to do it. And I used to tell people, you know, all this money goes to MDA. And I know that MDA has administrative costs. I'm not naive, but all the money was going to MDA. And then we didn't find out from the IFF. It wasn't like the IFF had a press conference to say, we're getting millions of dollars each year kickback from the MDA, or they're giving us a donation or a contribution to do this. It was uncovered in a Department of Labor LM2 that the IFF files with the Department of Labor, that millions of dollars is coming back to the IFF from the MDA. And I want to make it perfectly clear. I believe in the charity. I think they do great work. Adults, kids are stricken with this horrible disease. And I'm glad that the IFF takes a leadership role in supporting them. But the members that I talk to, we never even knew that the IFF was getting back. We're not talking about sponsoring a golf tournament or a dinner. We're talking about millions of dollars. And it's between like $948,000 to $1.2 million over the course of years. In some years, it's over $1 million in the same year. So I'd like you to kind of speak on that, because I think it's one of the questions that people have on their mind when supporting a charity.
So, and I've heard a lot of talk about this and a lot of chatter about this, and it's warranted. But I'll tell you, here in Wisconsin, and what I've learned and what I know to be the truth, at least what I'm told, is that when we do fill the boot here in Madison, for instance, or across the state, that our $600 to $700, sometimes $1 million we raise here in Wisconsin as a state body stays in Wisconsin. And I'm told that the dollars, because I actually had a problem, quite frankly, with MDA when I first, because I actually come from the charity side of the shop when it comes to union activity. I was actually our burn camp director, which I know all of us in the states have burn camp where we bring kids 7 to 17 in and have a burn camp a year. I was actually our burn camp director for 6 years and a counselor prior to that for 4 years, and helped be part of our, start our charitable organization here at Local 311. So MDA, I was not always a fan of actually MDA, because I thought it was too big. And I thought, you know, let's find a cure already. We've been at this since 1954. Let's get it done. But I've come to gain a better understanding. And there's no doubt in my mind that it takes money to raise money. We started a charitable foundation here in our state in 2013. I put together a working plan. We had $0 in the bank. Now we have close to $1 million in assets, but we have 2 full-time employees that are helping raise those assets to give money back out to our community. I believe that as firefighters and as best, especially as unions, we need to be in our communities outside of the emergency. It's not only the right thing to do, but it helps us at the bargaining table as well for those that have collective bargaining, and actually helps even more for those that don't have collective bargaining. But to answer your point, Brother Frank, head on. I do not have all the facts on what the IFF brings in by way of dollars above and beyond of what we raise or the network that the MDA has. I do know that, again, it costs money to make money. There is a staff person, that a liaison that works for the IFF, that the IFF, the MDA has got, that pays for. I know that there is staff work that's being done when it comes to networking, when it comes to advertising, to our members to, hey, get out, do the fill the boot. You know, they tried to do a virtual last year. I don't think that went very well, but like, get out, do fill the boot. Here's our charity of choice. Get out there, tell us whatever you need. I don't know if that goes to the point of what, when you're saying $600 to $1 million, I don't know if that expense rises to that level, but I can promise you this. I will not be okay with us taking more dollars from the MDA than that's required for us to do our work on behalf of the MDA. That's what I can promise you from me, Malin Mitchell. I can't speak to everything that's happened. I can't speak to even the dollar amount. I've heard $1.3 million. I've heard $1 million. I can tell you that any dollar that comes from the MDA will literally be only to provide and cover some administrative costs. And by the way, I think that we can cover some of that cost in our other dealings. I believe that every dollar that is raised from our brothers and sisters doing fill the boot on the street should stay locally. And every dollar that's raised should stay to help cure the muscular dystrophy issues that the MDA looks at and that they're dealing with, 100%. But there is, I will say, administratively, it does cost money to try to raise money. But does it rise to the level of what the IFF's getting? I'm not gonna sit here and act like I know, but I'll tell you, if it doesn't, if I'm your general president, that will be stopped.
I think your answer is completely fair. And I do really do like your point about keeping it local, because it does help the union. One of the things that I did is when I was president, we moved away from MDA at the end, and we started giving the sickle cell locally in the community, because we knew where the dollars were going. We could track it and we could see the benefit in the community. PJ, do you have a question?
I don't have a specific question, just I'm following the chat, and there's a lot of positive comments on followers agreeing with what you're saying and agreeing with your transparency and honesty. And personally, from right up front, when you said that we're going to agree to disagree on some stuff, I respect that a lot. and the way you're answering the questions. I really do respect and value your opinion. So thank you. But I know Chief Halton had something he'd like to speak to you about regarding presumptive legislation.
Well, it's like, real quick, going to your point, Frank and Brother Norwood, is that, you know, we didn't do on the street here in Madison for a while because we couldn't by way of our city ordinance. So we did Cults for Kids. And we saw the benefit, direct benefit for that. I'm a big fan of MDA now, don't get me wrong. But there's a lot of charities out there we give money to. So I don't want to, you know, belabor the point about arguing about who's getting what. But let's just do what's right for our community and see our community outside of the merge. Whatever charity that is that you want to do as a local, that's why we have a local autonomy. And as a state and provincial association, do that. There's nothing that requires you to do anything other than what you want to do. And like you just said, Brother Richie, you said, we did sickle cell because you saw a need in your community. So let's do that. Instead of always, it's always like back and forth. And what is actually getting done to help people? That's what I want to talk about. And that's what actually matters. And that's what we're about. So I'm not a pie in the sky. I'm not naive, but we have a lot of things that we can do. And there's a lot of things that we can be a part of as firefighters and paramedics and EMS professionals. And in our profession, seeing our community outside of the emergency, to me, is so vitally important. And we need to get back to doing that as opposed to, you know, we need to handle the problems at the top, no doubt. But let's get back to helping our communities because there's a lot of people that need help out there.
So I've got two things. I'm just going to read a statement that came in from Joey Hayes. And he was very complimentary. He said, you know, our job is to work together to design, you know, to lessen potential exposures. And he talks about, you know, providing gross decon, two sets of gear, all the stuff that I know Malin has worked for as long as I've known you in Wisconsin and throughout the country. So thank you, Joey, for joining in. So it kind of dovetails on the general discussion we've had so far. And two things that I've been, you know, obviously WIP affects retirees mostly. But this affects all of us, and it's presumptive legislation. And presumptive legislation, I know, is state to state, but I just ran into this currently, so I'm kind of speaking, you know, from my own recent experience. I'm currently in treatment. I'm midway through treatments for the current cancer I'm going through, and I still haven't been able to get an answer from my state about some of the presumptive issues related to it, which I find really interesting. And I know the IAFF, you know, does everything it can. But even on our website, once you're no longer an active member, you know, getting into our website is an act of God. You have to learn the secret handshake all over again, go through double blind probation. So it's kind of hard to get in there. But would you ever be supportive of maybe supplying more support services to those that are going through? And I know we've got the Center for Excellence for Mental Health, and I know we do a lot with the Cancer Support Network. But it, going through like the presumptive bills for guys and gals around the country that get sick is really tough. It's not a simple matter. And so I think what a lot of the, and I'm not accusing anybody of anything, but I think what happens to a lot of us is you just end up getting so frustrated at the end and it'll bankrupt you. I mean, quite frankly, you know, getting sick will bankrupt you. And so the presumptive laws kind of protect you, give you a cushion against bankruptcy, and which is really important. And so as we talk about all of these toxicity issues, Malin, would you ever be willing to, you know, work with some of the retirees, some of the cancer survivors and others to maybe make the presumptive bills more navigable and to maybe supply a little more support from the IAFF to those members who do find themselves either post active duty or active duty getting ill?
The simple answer, Chief, is yes. And I think, you know, that word presumptive, actually, we have them here in Wisconsin. We have heart and lung, obviously, but we also have presumptive infectious disease, presumptive cancers. And there's a number of cancers that are listed within that presumption. But I think a lot of our members just think the presumption means that's a slam dunk. There's still, as you know, so much bureaucracy that goes on with that. There's still the state and municipality can still object to it. There's still lawyers and for us, at least in the Department of Workforce Development and ETF that are our state body that regulates our pension that are still looking at it. you still need to have two doctors sign off on it. So the presumption is just there as protection to say that, you know, instead of you having, as you, I know I'm talking, preaching to the choir here, but instead of you having the onus is on you as a member or an employee, but the onus is actually on the employer to combat it, as opposed to you having to signify the call that you had to where that was, where do you actually cured, get that cancer or TB or whatever. So it's not a slam dunk. And presumptives are very, very hard to navigate through. I get many of my members that when it comes to dual disability and presumptives that are very upset at the whole process. And I keep telling them, like, you guys, I didn't make this process. We're just trying to navigate through it. And it is very difficult. And it's very complex. And at the end of the day, it's almost at times, and they make it this way, right? Workers' comp and other places, they make it this way so that you do just give up. And you don't want to spend the time or the money of getting an attorney to try to make sure you just, they back up the presumptive law. So I do think that's a place that the IFF can help and give more resources to so that we can have not just our active duty, but retirees as well. And those that are paying, those that aren't paying, it doesn't matter. I mean, if you're a 30-year member, you pay, you're not an active, you know, retired active member, who cares? You still paid 30 years of dues. We should have the ability for members to have a site that they can go on and a place that they can go on. And we should have resources dispatched that will help our members and our local officers to be able to navigate through that process, because every state is different. That's why I also love state and provincial associations, because there's a lot of resources there normally that can help with navigating through those processes.
Well, thank you for that answer. And oddly enough, I have to say thank you and turn off, because I've got to go for a radiation treatment of all things, right? Basically. And I'm going to be fine. Nobody lose their minds. I'm the only the good die young, so I'm destined to live forever. So, right.
Well, thank you for having me, and you stay safe and stay strong, brother.
And the rest of them are going to stay. But I just wanted everybody to know that I think the world of you. I love you. I think you're a great guy, and I think that, you know, you're just a wonderful human being, and one of the smartest guys I know. So. I wish you tremendous luck, and I thank you so much for doing this and for everything you've done and continue to do. So thank you for doing this. This was wonderful. And thank you. And I know
you're making me blush.
Well, no, but it's all
you
true.
You can't tell, but
no, and hey, you know, and I love the other guys they're running too. Eddie and I are best friends. You know that we've been buddies for a long time. I love him. I've known him as long as I've known you. And so I told Malin earlier privately, I said, I'm so glad I don't have to vote, you know, because they're two wonderful men. And I think that that's a blessing for the membership, is that wonderful men are stepping up. Wonderful men and women are stepping up to take leadership roles. And we should be extremely grateful. And I'll mention one final thing before we go. An IAFF member was able to do the Pledge of Allegiance at the inauguration today, to lead the Pledge of Allegiance. She's a captain just outside of Atlanta.
Fulton County, her name is Andrea Hall.
Andrea Hall, yep. Yeah. We did the press release on her. And Tim Burns, thank you for sending that to us. But what a great thing for the fire service to have the Pledge of Allegiance led by, you know, one of our own. And you talk about a cool thing to be able to put on your resume. I mean, like, duh. There's like, you know, everybody says, oh, you're a fire chief. Yeah, you and 40,000 other guys. Or you're an internship fire chief. Yeah, you and half a dozen other guys or a dozen other guys. Oh, you did the Pledge of Allegiance and somebody's inauguration? That's one person that can say that, man. And so God bless her and God bless the new administration. I hope they're wonderfully successful. I hope they do God's work and keep America strong and I know and I'm sure they will. I think we've got, you know, with all our flaws and all our warts, we're still the greatest country in the world. And if you don't believe me, ask the thousands and thousands of people who try to become Americans and try to get into America every year. No one's trying to get out, you know? It's like the fire service. We all complain and nobody leaves. And even after we leave,
even when we talked about, maybe I said this earlier, but we talk about race relations and, you know, civil unrest all across the country. you know, I was on a call earlier today with a local, and they asked about civil unrest in our country. And I said, in the kitchen table, what we're talking about. I think you said earlier, I know we make up the best of America in the fire service, my opinion.
We do.
And the conversations we have at the kitchen table should be broadcast around, because they're real, they're succinct. We come together. We're all different cultures for the most part. We're from all different areas. We all have different backgrounds, and we talk about things. We argue about things. We're like a family. I get uncles and cousins in Cleveland that I don't like at all, but they're my family, right? But when the tone goes off in the fire service, we all get up and do our jobs, and we do it together. That's what America should be about.
The difference, I think, is that many of our political classes has forgotten it's about our shared humanity and our love for each other as human beings. Because at the end of the day, irrespective of how you approach a problem, it doesn't make you any less human, you know what I mean? Or any less vulnerable. And we're all so vulnerable. And we have to understand that and be kind and respectful. It doesn't mean we can't disagree completely. You know, that's fine. But when you start casting aspersion or questioning somebody's morality, that's off limits. And firefighters never do that. You know, we might look at each other and say, man, you're an idiot. You know what I mean? You're, Bobby, you're a dope. You know, but we still love each other. You know what I mean? It's like, you're dopey about this issue. And Will Rogers said it best. He said two things. He said, we're all ignorant, just different subjects. And he also said that he never met a man he didn't like. And I can honestly say, and I think everybody on this call can say, I've never met a fellow firefighter I didn't love. I might disagree with them. I might not like something they did, but if you ask me if I love them, yeah, I love them, because they're willing to march into hell for a heavenly cause, just like, you know, the song Don Quixote, right? An impossible dream.
And Man de la Mancha.
Man de la Mancha, yeah. 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 And I think there's a lot of that in all of us. We're tilting at windmills, and we always will. And I think that's huge. And so thank you, my friend, for being on with us. I apologize, guys. Please keep going. There's no hard close on this. As long as Malin and Sean can visit, you guys, please keep going. But I want to say thank you to everybody. And please, nobody call me or send me any text messages. I'm not dying. I'm not happy. I'm not healthy, but I'm not dying. And I'll be fine. So don't anybody lose their head over it. I'm not. So if I'm not worried, nobody else should be worried. So I love you
now
all.
You're gonna get tons of calls and tons of text messages right now.
I know. And that's why, yay. But
after he signs off, we're going to give out his number.
No, please. Well, I always put it up there. Everybody has it. I'm just like you guys. I'll answer, but I'm fine. I'm sticking Drano up my butt, and you know what the cool thing is? You guys have to plug in your phones at night. I got so much radiation in me, I just put this thing in my pocket and I'm good to go. So I'll see you guys later.
Good health to you, Chief.
Love you guys.
Malin, we really thank you for coming on today. It does, you know, it is an uncomfortable situation to come on because you don't know what's going to be thrown at you. And the fact is, of course, you handled it with grace. So I encourage anybody. I think back when I was coming up through the IFF, the slogan was always on the front line. And I really believe that. I actually got fired for union activity, being on the health and safety committee when my wife was pregnant at the time. And I just moved my family back from DC into Connecticut. So I know what it's like to fight those battles. And what I learned is that slogan of always being on the front line, sometimes it kind of, well, always on the front line unless somebody's shooting at us. So a lot of candidates didn't have the courage to come onto this show, and we treat everybody fair. So I give you a lot of credit. I give you a lot of personal credit. And I think the members appreciate that. So my last question is a softball, and then you can give us the closing.
So Frank, was that an endorsement? Are you endorsing me then right now?
Right now, I'm not endorsing anybody. I'm just trying to be bipartisan. I work for a bipartisan think tank now, so I'm not being political. I just want what's best for the individual union members. And I worked my whole life as a union rep for 16 years, putting the members first. And that's what I'd like to see at the IFF. So
it's
pretty simple. One thing I did notice on your website that I really liked, and I come as a city union president, but your website spoke to the unions that are smaller than 100. And I thought that was good because I don't really hear enough about that. It seems like everybody just wants the smaller unions money to do this conference and that conference, and they're struggling. And I always found it ironic. I got paid very well as a union president. I had no complaints about my salary. But my brother was a union president in a town that had only, I think, 30 firefighters. And he didn't get paid to be union president. And yet he had all the same headaches that I had as a union president. And I always thought that was unfair. So when I looked at your website today and I saw that you were offering some training and you wanted to speak to those locals, I want to give you the last word and just kind of answer where you're going with the smaller locals, because I think they do need some support besides people always going in their pocket.
Yeah, and 100%. Majority of our locals, so we have 62 locals here in Wisconsin. Majority of our locals are 95%, I think 94.7%, but 95% of our locals are 100 and under in size. So we did a lot of things here in our state that I think that could translate to the IFF, that I know could translate to the IFF. Majority of locals in IFF are 100 and under. But unfortunately, and it's nothing against larger locals because, you know, obviously they have a lot of work. They have more headaches. But at the end of the day, we're all in this together. And a lot of that's a cliche, right? A lot of people are like, oh, we're all in this together. Well, everyone freaking says that. But you think about it, our smaller locals need help. And it makes us all better. It makes everyone, all of our locals better. So some things we've done here in our state, we started a statewide pack. I actually cut my salary. We gave $1 per member per month back to the membership. They had turn assessed themselves $1 per member per month. We started a statewide PAC that not only gives us money to give money to statewide elected officials, but we give money back to our locals. And our locals actually that need help in local, county, and referendum races. They're now able to not just have the money, but I started a political action team as well. We can dispatch almost like a strike team, right? To be able to go and give boots on the ground as well as we can give funding to our locals when we have an asshole county exec or a jerk mayor, that we can go in and get them out, do what we can to start a referendum. We've had just in the last past election cycle, two smaller locals that we have, Beaver Dam and Grand Chute, which is right outside of Green Bay, to be able to hire firefighters. And that was because of the help we get from the IFF, as well as the help that we can provide as a state association to help our locals of all different sizes. We've helped Milwaukee, our largest local, Local 215, it's our largest local in Wisconsin. We've helped them with PAC dollars. We have a statewide conference that would have 40 or 50 members go. And all our states mostly have conferences. But we have an educational leadership conference that we would have 40 or 50 members go. I asked the question, why no one's coming? They said, well, we can't freaking afford it. It's $300 a pop. So we came back to the drawing board as an executive board. We made it free now for two members from every one of our locals to be able to come to the state association educational leadership conference and political conference. Now we get 240 up to 260 members. And all we did was raise some of our vendors' fees and trim some of the fat at the top. We used to have an annual convention. I thought like, okay, if the IFF can do their work in 2 years, if the AFL-CIO can do their work in every 4 years, why can't we do our work every 2 years here in the state of Wisconsin? It saved 62 cents per cap per month per member. We went to a binary convention, obviously by a convention action resolution, and we gave 100% of that 62 cents back to our locals, every local. And that saved money for our locals. We started a program that would actually allow, if you come to our statewide educational conference, we would pay. We have a scholarship program to pay for locals of 100 and under in size to go to the International Association of Firefighters ALTS program. And we've never turned anybody down yet because, you know, these things aren't cheap. They're $2,000 a pop. And these aren't cheap hotels. So you're paying for registration, hotel fees, and flight from the Midwest. It's $2,000 a pop. I don't care if you go to Phoenix or if you're going to California or Florida. So we started a scholarship program where we actually, the state association, helps our smaller locals to be able to get the education they need to go back home and help their members, which is our job, our main focus, advancing the interests of firefighters through legislation and our programs and services. So it's imperative that we help every local. But our smaller locals are needing help right now, and we got to answer that call. And I'm going to do that. If I'm your general president, brothers, I'm going to do that, and I'm going to do it for every local. and no one's going to be left behind. Again, it sounds like a cliche, but you can ask folks here in Wisconsin and ask folks, the locals that I serve. It's not a cliche to me. It's real. The IFF has changed my life. I have two brothers in the fire service. My older brother's down in Atlanta, Georgia. My younger brother's up in St. Paul, Minnesota. The IFF has changed the trajectory of my life and my kid's life. And in my name, and our name as Mitchells, not Sean Mitchell, but Malin Mitchells, for the future. And that's real to me. That's serious. The IFF has changed my life, and I want to help in making sure it changes other members' lives out there in the field.
Very well said. We want to thank you for coming on. We are going to post at the bottom of this the link to your campaign video, as we've done for all the candidates. We really appreciate your time. We also want to advocate for resolution 28. Am I correct, Sean? The resolution 28 on chemicals in our PPE. It's not just about the inference of impropriety with taking the money. It's about finding new options and educating our members. And again, Jason Burns was unable to be with us today, the president of Fall River. We appreciate his leadership and Sean Mitchell's leadership on this today. Malin, thumbs up and see, it wasn't so bad. Frank's not the big bad wolf. I don't know. I don't understand that, but that's what they like to say. But if you're not catching flack, you're not over the target. So I wish you luck in your endeavors. And PJ, congratulations on your retirement and have a great day and be safe.
Thank you all for having me.
Thank you. Good luck in the future and good luck in the election, Malin. I wish you the best.
Thank you, sir.